You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, it's Thursday, the 25th of April, 2024. This is TNT, today's News Talk. We're coming at you live, beaming out of our secret bunker in the Gold Coast in Australia, but obviously reaching into the furthest corners of the world this morning. So whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, we hope it's nice, legal, and edifying. Welcome. You can leave us a message in our live chat, tntradio.live. You can send me a personal message on my email address, rickmunn@tntradio.live, and I will do my level best to read through it and possibly even respond or action some of the suggestions you good people do send to me from time to time. So please feel free to do that. Action-packed show coming up today. You should not expect any less. In the first hour here, I'm going to be talking to Gemma Cooper, our news correspondent, in just a minute. Then, all being well, fingers and toes crossed, Christian James, independent investigative researcher extraordinaire, should be joining me at around about 20 past. Then the stalwart of Locked and Loaded, Basil Valentine, should be joining me towards the end of the first hour. Second hour, more Gemma Cooper, a double bill of Gemma Cooper this morning, as with every morning. How lucky are you people, eh? How lucky are you people? Then, after Gemma, I'm going to be talking to Johnny Vedmore. Yes, the Johnny Vedmore. He's going to be hopping on at 20 past. We're going to talk about what? No idea. Nothing planned, nothing scripted. We're going to just shoot the breeze, chew the fat, go with the flow. And then, to round it all off, Jane Black will be beaming in from the Glens of Antrim, the beautiful Glens of Antrim here in Ireland. We're going to look at what's happening up in the north, Northern Ireland, call it whatever you like. That's towards the end of the second hour. So, just to remind you, check out our website. There's calendars on there. There's schedules on there. You can listen back to episodes that you may have missed with your favorite presenter or your favorite guest. Or you can watch back on video. Or you can watch the live stream. It's embedded onto our homepage. And, of course, we have a merchandise shop on there. Deck yourself. Deck yourself from head to toe in TNT merch. And you can do it, by the way. We've got a cap for your head. We've got t-shirts and hoodies for your top. I'm not sure if we have TNT underpants, but if we don't, they should also be an item that you should be able to wear. There's probably TNT bottoms. I know there's TNT socks. There's TNT mugs. There's TNT just about everything in there. Stickers, the whole shebang. So get yourself on there and become a walking billboard for us. And check out the What's On calendar. Also, two events of note coming up next month in May. Two weekend camping truth / music type festivals. You can go up there, hobnob, be enlightened, be stimulated, rock out maybe, or I don't know, do whatever you do at a festival. Maybe smoke stuff, maybe get up to things, you know, in your tent. I don't know. What do you people do at festivals? Leave us a message in the live chat. If you're feeling brave and anonymous, tell us exactly what you get up to at these festivals. And depending on your answers, I will either be avoiding those festivals or going there myself. So the first one is the Weekend Truth Festival, 3rd to the 5th of May, Lake District, UK. And then the Stand in the Park / Light Paper collaboration, Stand in the Light Music Festival, Lake District again, 24th to the 27th of May. Check out the full details on our website, tntradio.live, and brace yourselves for incoming news headlines here on TNT.
Be a part of the conversation.
I want representation I can trust.
Have your say.
Biden isn't doing enough.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gemma, music festivals, yes or no?
Yes. Oh my God, huge fan. Love them. Because, you know, when you go somewhere like that, I don't know how many festivals you've been to in your life, Rick, but you're like, none.
I hate people. I don't like being around people, especially in tents, in muddy fields. Hate people. So I've never actually been to a music festival. That's why I'm asking you, what do you think about them?
Oh, I mean, I'm the opposite of the spectrum, because you go to a festival, right? And then, so like, here we go, see my hands. Real life is here. Uh-huh. And festivals are here, and then real life goes way, 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 way over here, and you're in a different reality. And I've been to so many, and before I kind of realized that Glastonbury Festival was maybe not quite what it was said it was on the tin, if you scrape behind who runs that, I used to go there all the time. In fact, I am going this year. I was lucky enough to get some tickets, and I am going to go. I haven't been for a long time, but I used to look around, you know, and I just think, this is the most glamorous refugee camp in the world. And everybody was getting on. No police presence. Everyone could regulate their own behavior because everybody was happy and free and having a good time, you know? And I think there's a lot to be said from when you let people out of the shackles of the matrix, put them in nature for a few days, give them some music to dance around to, maybe have a few drinks, get a bit loose, nothing major, you know, just be happy and relaxed. You'd be amazed what can happen. The change in people, you can literally see them decompress as they walk through the gates. I'm a huge fan, Rick. Maybe you should come to a music festival with me and we can hang out, you know, see what happens.
I'd love to. Listen, it's a beautiful offer. And under any other circumstances, I might well take you up on it. But I revert you back to my original point. I'm a solitary kind of guy. I was thinking about this morning. What kind of person is Rick Munn? Am I living the life that I want to live? And the answer to that is pretty much yes. I only have about three friends. Literally, I have three friends, and I haven't seen those close friends for probably about 3 months now. I hang out with my wife, my daughter, and my cat. And when I go out in public, I have to put headphones in so I don't hear people talking crap. And I'm just an antisocial, nasty little, cynical, antisocial Irishman. And I really don't think, if I went to a festival with you, it would ruin it for you, Gemma. I would be bitching and moaning and complaining and pointing the finger everywhere and moaning and looking at my watch or my phone, seeing what time it was, waiting to get the hell out of there. So thank you very much for the offer, but I'm saving you a lot of pain and suffering here along with the other people in the festival. It's just not really my thing. But having said that, before we dive into the news headlines, and you know what, I heard, and by the way, I'm going to give you a bit of flack here. Glastonbury, back in the day, yes, you know, it was the one that kicked everything off. End of June, summer, all that, Michael Eaves' big farm. The last few years, from what I've seen, the footage, it's been a woke fest, at least to a degree. I know there's lots of stages and all that, but there seems to be a little agendas getting pushed there from what I've seen. And you know what? The thought of me paying and going there and sleeping, roughing it in a tent surrounded by crusties, and then listening to some woke agenda. Oh, I'd rather put my fingers in a meat mincer, quite frankly, Gemma, than go to Glastonbury, but each to their own. I'm just telling you how it is for me, old Ricky Munn.
Well, you're right. No, you are. You're completely right. You're completely right. And no, there is something, you know, I would like to do kind of a bit more of a TNT investigation into Glastonbury. Old Michael Eavis, the organizer, has just received a knighthood.
Good.
You know,
good.
That says it all. Says it all. And I was back in the day, my first Glastonbury, I was 16 years old. I jumped on a bus after my O levels. That shows how old I am. And went down and got in. And it was, you know, it wasn't what it is now. It has grown to become something deeply agenda setting. I'm going almost as a piece of research, and I'm lucky enough to have some tickets, but there is an agenda. Agenda there, huge. They put the rainbow flag at the first Glastonbury after the pandemic. They thanked the NHS. They did a whole thing with the NHS on stage, which went global around the world. And it's energetically, it is on the Michael Merry ley line. That's a thing that does exist. And so what happens there reverberates. What happens in Glastonbury reverberates around the world. I'm with you. I'll be doing a bit of research there and seeing. The last time I went was 2016. First time I went was 1987. There we go. Back in the day, it's changed a huge amount. And it's been allowed to become extremely successful. And there is other stuff behind the scenes going on there, I think. And further investigation warranted. Come with me, Rick. We'll do it together.
I'm going to tell you something. There might be a little angle to be had here. You know, if you have a nice word with our, our big cheeses here, you might even get, you know, a fully funded, all expenses paid research grant from TNT to go to Glastonbury, and then, you know, do no research, of course, just do what a normal journalist would do when they get free tickets. Just get drunk, smoke some stuff, do some other things that you don't want the world to know about, and take some dodgy mobile phone footage and say it's a documentary. That's what journalists seem to do these days. But speaking of madness, okay, I saw this one this morning just before we get to the news headlines. Somebody who doesn't pop up on my social media feed very much, Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi, and why? Why did she pop up? I'm not even sure if you're aware of this one, but she was in London today, or maybe she wasn't. Maybe he was over there, actually. She said yesterday, "Today I was pleased to meet with the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, to support his leadership and discuss his efforts to achieve a fairer and more equitable London for all." So Sadiq and Nancy, standing together in front of the American flag. I imagine he's travelled rather than she's came to London, looking very smug indeed, as these rats tend to do, Gemma. What was Sadiq up to, do you think, over hobnobbing with Nancy Pelosi?
Well, clearly drumming up support from fellow globalists, I would say, and agenda setters. I haven't seen that story myself, so that's breaking news to me, actually, Rick. I'll go and have a look at that after we come off air at this first hour of Locked and Loaded, and see what we think might be going on there. But yeah, it's only a week now to the elections. So he's off drumming up as much support as he can. Interesting. Yeah, I'm surprised he's left the country in a mayoral campaign. But, it's got global headlines, obviously. But yeah, I wasn't aware of it, so I can't really comment. I haven't seen it. I haven't looked at any of the detail.
Well, I literally just saw the picture this morning, and she put it out 15 hours ago, which would have been last night-ish our time. So there you go. They're standing together, grinning, shaking hands in front of the American flag. So Sadiq and Nancy, maybe they're going to record a single together. Okay, maybe they're going to record a single together. I don't know. Anything's possible these days. But that aside, headline-wise, breaking news-wise, finally, yes, we'll get round them. I'm great at off tracking you here and digressing left, right, and centre. What have we got?
We've got Scotland, where a power sharing agreement, a historic power sharing agreement, actually, between the SNP and the Greens, has been dissolved this morning by Humza Yousaf, the First Minister and leader of the SNP. In the last few minutes, he's given a press conference about why he's pulled out. Emergency cabinet meeting this morning at 8:30 UK time was when it was announced. He denied to press that he's heading for the door, and this is a kind of exit. He also denied that, he broke up the relationship before the Green Party could end it for him. And this is all a result, of course, of the Scottish National Party government announcing it was going to renege on its zero emissions targets, that 75% reduction by 2030 was unsustainable. Net zero has been pushed back to 2045. The Greens didn't like that, and they are power sharing. And also the rainbow lobby of the Green Party in Scotland did not like the reaction to the CAS report, the NHS clinic there, the only one in Scotland which prescribes gender puberty blocking drugs, announced last week that in reaction to the review, it would suspend that protocol. The rainbow lobby of the Green Party did not like any of these policies, and they were all set to vote, the Green Party, on whether they wanted to stay working with the SNP. That vote was due to be held in a few weeks' time. Looks like Humza Yousaf's got in first and ended the deal for them today. The two co-leaders looking decidedly disappointed. They said that they thought the Green vote would vote to stay in working with the SNP. Humza Yousaf has drawn a line under it. And he said, no, somebody said to him, one of the journalists, oh, is this because it's better to do the breaking up than to be dumped? And he said, ridiculous. I'm just taking control of the situation. I think there might be an element of that, though, that the Greens may have voted to leave, and that would have been by a confidence vote. So that's the big headline today. Other big headline doing the rounds now, it's emerged that two teachers and another teenager were in hospital, a deputy head teacher, a special needs teacher, and another teenager, after an attack at a school in Wales yesterday, a stabbing. A teenage girl's been arrested in connection with attempted murder, not charged, but arrested. That's one to watch. And do you remember those horses yesterday, Rick, that threw their riders and bolted through the streets of London, leading many on social media, loads, hundreds, thousands of people actually, to comment that it did look like the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse and some kind of occult ritual symbolism exercise. Their horses are now, it's been announced today, they're in a serious condition. So, people are concerned about those horses. It's not looking good for some of them. And we did see the ones covered in blood, very distressing images. So that's the latest update on the horses from the Household Cavalry that bolted through central London yesterday.
The horse thing, I'm thinking about this one. I've been meditating and ruminating on this one since we spoke yesterday. There's been a lot of, when anything happens in the world these days, there's people that believe it's real. And then there's people that automatically label it as a false flag, a setup, and one thing and another. So I try not to jump to either conclusion. I tend to step back a little bit, let the dust settle, have a look at this one. So since our reporting on this one yesterday, or since you and I talked about this one yesterday, a lot of people have been posting stuff up, analyzing it, you know, breaking it all down. What does it mean, the symbolism? Someone's even went and found a website where, you know, the way some events like the NHS would have hired crisis actors to jump into bed and, you know, get on the ventilators and pretend they were dying of COVID. Well, apparently someone's found a website with horses on it, 50 horses that are available, crisis horses for use in films and, you know, doing stunt horses, if you like. And they've got a white one. They've superimposed it on that one running down London yesterday. It looks like the same horse and they think it's been splattered with fake blood. I don't know. Okay, I'm not saying I know this, but something's a little bit dodgy from what we said yesterday. You know, they should be trained not to be spooked so easily. Some falling cement, five of them running around. There was a very striking image of a black horse and a white horse, the white one being covered in blood. And, you know, the reference to the four horsemen of the apocalypse as written in the book of Revelation in the Bible, the colors of those horses are white, red, pale, and black. Okay, so yeah, two of them were there anyway. So if there's another incident today and there's a red one and a pale one running down the streets of London with men on the back with hoods on and big scythes, well, then maybe, just maybe, I'll read a little more into it apocalyptically wise. But yeah, it's got a lot of people talking, Gemma, and no matter what the outcome is, if the horses are have been injured, of course, we don't like to see animals being hurt, and if anybody's been hurt there too, we don't like to see that either. But let's see what happens with this one. Look out for a red horse and look out for a pale horse. The pale one's the one you don't want to see, okay, because on the pale horse the rider is called Death and Hell follows after him. So anyway, we don't want that. We don't want to see that on the streets of London. That's the old preacher coming out of me, dressed in my black apocalyptic suit here. But anyway, I'm losing it a little bit here, Gemma. That's a good time to take a break, pause, and God help the first guest today, Christian James. Yes, like yesterday, he's incoming. Thank you so much. We'll talk again in the second hour. We'll be right back after this break here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
TNT's Mark Morano.
Politico: German transport minister threatens, quote, indefinite driving bans on weekends to meet climate goals. Yay! Roll out the barrel. There you go. This is akin to Stalin's five-year plan, the Chinese agricultural revolution, so to speak, where bureaucrats, usually mid-level, enforce these diktats from high-level bureaucrats and politicians from big summits like UN climate summits. And each sector of the economy has goals. And if you fail to meet them, drastic action may be necessary.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody,
and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity.
If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Oh, yes, yes.
Then I'll begin.
Even when you're just sitting around, we're rocking the talk.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, TNT, Today's News Talk, and hopefully my little editorial ranting with Gemma hasn't put you off and caused you to switch off and go and, you know, have a Valium or something to sedate yourself after my intro about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. But anyway, I'm talking now with the one and only Christian James, or at least I hope it's him. It looks like him, sounded like him. Christian James, is it you, or
are
you a deep fake?
No, I'm definitely me. I'm definitely Christian James. I've emerged from my pit of having a couple of days off, and I'm here to talk to the world and see what's going on, because the world right now is a little crazy place. Clown world is ever rolling out. It's just clown feet everywhere.
Isn't it? And, isn't it? It's not the only thing that's rolling out at the minute. I was commenting the other day about a story. I think we're going to delve into it now. But when I see Rishi Sunak, he's a skinny little guy and he wears those skinny little trousers. You know, they just about graze his ankles and they're like drain pipe trousers. But I'm amazed at how deep the pockets are in those trousers of his, because he seems to be able to produce half a billion here, 3 billion there, you know, 2.5% of GDP everywhere. You know, they used to joke he had a magic money tree in number 11 when he was the Chancellor of the Exchequer printing money for furlough. But now the defence spending, oh, biggest since the Cold War. Are we really in that much danger, Christian, that we need to start racking up the defence spending to the level he wants us to?
It's an interesting quandary, isn't it? Is that perhaps we're sat on too much money and we need to spend it. But no, it's interesting how much money we can literally magic out of nowhere. It's only perhaps 5 years ago when I can remember Jeremy Corbyn saying perhaps we need to spend $20 billion on fixing the UK's infrastructure and the homeless problem in the country. And everyone was like, we don't have that kind of money. Yet magically, of course, we found $330 billion like on day one for COVID and all this money that appears to be we could send happily overseas and to keep for ourselves to spend on our infrastructure and our military spending. It is amazing where this money is coming from. But of course, as inflation goes up, the number goes up. But does the equal value proposition come out of that? I don't think so. But no, I saw yesterday, I saw Rishi Sunak digging into those deep drainpipe trousers, and he's going, well, we need to spend 2.5% increase on our defence budget over the next 7 years, and we want to make it to... how much money do they want? Is that? How much money is that creating? Is that creating money out of... is that money for jobs? Is that money for equipment? Is that money for infrastructure? We don't know. Just that that's how much money we need to generate in order to fulfill our NATO spend and our NATO obligation, which we, of course, we are pushing forward. We want that. We want more activity going across Europe. We want to confront Russia and confront China, which I guess economically would make a sort of sense. But we want to go hammer and chisel at them with their war machine. I mean, I don't think we're quite up to scratch with that. We've been talking about over the last few months, of course, England's failure with its military and so on. And here we are. We want to spend this amount of money, push so much money into NATO, do more drills and more war exercises. And it's kind of wondering, what do we really want to do here? Who's really benefiting from this? There's no motion to scale this back. There's no motion to go, can we get back around a table? Can we de-escalate the situation in the Ukraine and Russia? Can we de-escalate what's happening in Gaza and Israel? No, all we want to do is spend money and make it worse.
Here's the thing, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the whole reason behind NATO is that everybody bands together. If one gets attacked, we all get attacked against Mother Russia. We can all band together. It's a little bit like the school playground. There's a big bully in the school playground. There's lots of skinny little kids there, and if they stand alone, they have no chance against the bully. But if 10 of them get together, they can jump the bully and give him a good old kick and send him a message, if you like. Is that not the whole reason why NATO was put together in the first place? And if it was, let's say Britain's armaments are a little bit lackluster. Let's say their numbers are a little bit lacking in the armed forces. If Putin, for example, should bypass every other European country and make a beeline for Blighty, surely the whole purpose of NATO is that France and Germany and so on and so forth, they'd all pile in on the back of that to help defend them. It's a collective thing. So, you know, could we not just ease off and say, well, you know, let France take a little bit of the heat here. Let Germany take a little bit of the heat here. I know they say they've got obligations, but come on, they can cook the books, can they not?
No, what you said there is a really good analogy of what the situation is. Lots of people can shut down a person, of course, who decides to act on their own initiative. I don't think Russia wants to do that. It's quite clear that that's not their actions. They clearly have an agenda with what's going on in Ukraine. They have a situation they wish to resolve and get over with. There's no reason why they'd want to come all the way to the English Channel and beyond. I mean, and like you said there, France, Germany, all the other NATO countries would already be involved in their front line earlier than that situation. So we shouldn't have to be making those kind of actions. Perhaps if you lived in Germany, it might be a bit of a different situation. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I noticed that we're talking about is where this money is going to come from. So there was Brent Schnapps yesterday talked about there's going to be a reduction of 72,000 jobs in this UK civil service. He used a very particular line that I thought was really interesting. He says this will go back to pre-COVID levels of administration. So what that means is since COVID kicked in 2019, to year 2020, they created 70,000 admin jobs. I don't think that actually really happened. I don't think there was an increase of that amount of roles that went out across the country. Perhaps those who were in the NHS and services, sure. But in terms of the civil service, I think the civil service actually lost jobs. So those 70,000 jobs that he's looking to get rid of, I mean, I did a quick Google search yesterday about the average Meridian cost of a salary in the civil service. But of course, that's a wide breadth, but it's about 30,000. So 30,000 times 72,000 comes out about 2.3 billion. And that's how much money they're then going to inject into a different column of what they're spending. But that also means that there's 70,000 jobs who are going to disappear. That's a lot of money that's going to be a lot of jobs that's now going to actually go to the universal credit system.
Let's pause. Actually, we've got to take a news headline break, and just on the let's come back at the other side and talk about grant shops, because these 72k jobs that you're mentioning, I had a background where I worked for the a large governmental organization in Northern Ireland before I came to TNT, and I watched many people leave and retire never to be replaced. This was at the tail end or the beginning of the whole COVID scam, okay, from 2020 right the way up until 2021-22 when I left that. So let's look at what he said there, and also the rhetoric that he's been spinning to justify this 75 billion defence spending over the next 6 years, talking about the world being a more dangerous place. And then what Rishi Sunak says, he says, well, actually, there will be no additional increase in borrowing or debt. This has already been fully funded. So very interesting.
Fully funded.
Fully funded in inverted commas, you know, trademark sign after that. So let's look at some of this rhetoric when we come back after the headlines here on TNT. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Here's what's making news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Tensions over Israel's war in Gaza have flared in America, with riot police clashing with students at colleges and universities across the country. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has responded to the uprising, demanding authorities do more to shut it down.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific.
And it's been revealed the US secretly shipped a batch of long-range missiles to Ukraine, which have been used to strike a Russian airfield.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Okay, Christian, you brought up about this 72,000 admin jobs likely in the civil service during the COVID years. This is coming from the Right Honourable Grant Shapps. And of course, anything this man says should be taken with a pinch of salt, given he has at least three different aliases that he goes by, depending on what he's doing on any particular day or what event he's attending. I think another one of his aliases is Michael Green. Don't know if you know this about Grant Shapps or not, but he has at least two other aliases that he used to hobnob around and network around when he was a young Tory. But 72K jobs. Okay, my last job was in the Northern Ireland Housing Executive, probably the largest social housing administrator in Europe. Big amounts of staff here in Northern Ireland, thousands of people. But what I noticed in the last few years was that as people were leaving, they weren't being replaced. The work was just spread around whoever was left. Now, many people would think, well, that's unreasonable. That's not fair. But the truth of the matter is, with many civil servant jobs, they're just pen pushers and paper shufflers, okay? Somebody once told me, if you're going for a walk around the building, you know, just to kill some time, stick a folder under your arm, make it look like you're going to or coming from a meeting. So in other words, if I leave, I'm not really, there's not going to be a whole lot of admin work needs to be picked up. Somebody else will pick up the slack. So as people left, nobody was being replaced. The work was actually being spread around other people. And in fact, if we did take on extra staff, it was always agency workers that were never given full-time jobs. So this 72K extra admin work to be done in the civil servant, I didn't see anybody being brought in to supplement our workforce in the organization that I was in at the time. Granted, it wasn't the civil service, but it was akin to it here in Northern Ireland. So, you know, is there any way to audit this or fact check this guy to see if he's telling porky pies?
It's interesting because where are all these 72,000 jobs? I mean, would they be across the Ministry of Justice? Would it be across, like, public services? I have seen in more recent months, there's been a large move to close all. I mean, I live in Nottingham, so the one thing I'm really interested in here is what they're doing to our library system. So all the libraries in the city are going to be closed in the next 3 months. So are these the civil service jobs that they've decided to get rid of?
Sorry to cut in. What are they closing the libraries for?
Nottingham City Council basically has found itself, it became one of the councils in the country that went bankrupt. It applied for a Section 117, which basically is it has no red tape to spend its money on. So all excess spending is to disappear. I personally think that, of course, libraries is the only free accessible service there is in the country. But no, unfortunately, all the libraries are due to close. But even those are operated actually by Inspire, which is like a national agency of workers, effectively. And I'm trying to work out, so where are these jobs going to disappear from? Is it like probation service? Is it like those in like the jails, for instance? I use the criminal element really just to say, are these jobs just going to disappear from those services? Is it going to be social workers? Are they going to disappear? Or what services will thus be affected by these 72,000 jobs that are going to disappear? What the sure start services? I mean, Labour wants to restart them up again, but of course is looking to also continue the same spending of this 2.5 million increase. So there's lots of numbers juggling here. I'm not quite sure it adds up. And listening to what you were saying there about the Northern Ireland situation, absolutely right. I've never seen any increase in the amount of staffing in these positions. So I just think we're going to lose 72,000 jobs. But where they are right now, I don't know where they are.
Yeah, and you mentioned the justice system as well. And again, I don't have the answer to this, but you've caused me to, I'm starting to think about it. You mentioned the justice system. Well, we know that there's a huge backlog in the court systems. Sure. Even in Northern Ireland, you probably heard about Geoffrey Donaldson, who's the ex-DUP leader. He appeared yesterday at a magistrate's court charged with historical sex offences. They were talking about maybe because of his position, the case could get fast-tracked before he sees his day in court. But he's been told that's probably not going to happen. It could be at least Christmas of 2025 before his case gets to court because of the amount of backlog in the Northern Ireland court services. So again, I don't know where they went, but court wise there's no eradication or there's no cut down in the backlog of cases waiting to get to court at the minute, especially in Northern Ireland. So again, I don't know. It's a bizarre, a lot of people, 72,000 is a lot of jobs, man.
It is, yeah. I mean, like HMRC is based in Nottingham. I mean, they've just had a massive like shedding of jobs a little while back. So when you think about what the government infrastructure is in terms of administration, I mean, a lot of it really is managing money, managing accounts, managing administration of just services in the community and so on. So if you were to take those away, the backlog would actually be caused without them doing their operations, as it were, will make things even more difficult for the country to keep moving, lubricated as it's the economy works. Yeah. So I think this actually could be disastrous going back the other way. Perhaps not right now, but certainly a year down the line when you don't have a government or an infrastructure that's actually working correctly.
Yeah, and the other thing is too, you know, I'm just thinking as you're talking here, libraries, I'm picturing a library, I'm picturing a big building full of books, I'm picturing something that doesn't require an awful lot of upkeep, as in, you know, you don't need a lot of health and safety, you don't need security people in there, you've got a couple of librarians in there, everything's automated, the books, scan the book in, scan the book out, if somebody's late sending it back, there's an automatic notice generated by the local council. What does it take, 5-6 people to staff a library? The stock is just on shelves. You might get some people in cleaning it from time to time, but it's a hub for the community. And as you said, a free place where people can come, maybe socialize, maybe, you know, they're isolated, they can come to the library, they can read books and get some peace and quiet. So it seems odd as well that they swing the axe at the libraries, because I would have thought they would have been minimum maintenance costs to keep them going, minimum staffing costs, and maximum benefit to the community.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so one story I've been following with Patrick, and I've been updating him over the last few months, okay, is that, of course, Nottingham City Council, of course, is in bankruptcy, but there's 47 other councils that are also now facing that kind of red line situation where they don't have any excess spending. They're down to a minimum skeleton staff and crew of operations. So again, across countrywide, you mean, where do you trim out 72,000 people? To make up your 2.2 billion to basically spend on arms and military, we're probably going to send to the Ukraine and across to Israel.
We're not running the country. We're not responsible for budgets and council budgets. But here's a little simple thought. Again, take the libraries, for example, however many they're going to close down. Let's assume even, let's keep two open. Let's just keep two libraries open in Nottingham. That's $75 billion that's being allocated towards defense spending. You think about the billions that was allocated, the trillions that was allocated towards furlough payments, buying vaccines, PPE, the test and trace app. Surely they could siphon off, what, $500,000 to keep essential, vital public services going, like libraries and places that are financially going bust, even like Nottingham, to say, well, look, there's a little grant that'll keep the library open for another year, you know, and we'll take that out of the $75 billion that we've allocated towards buying munitions and ordnance for fighting against Mother Russia. Would that be unreasonable?
It's a dire situation. And when you think about I was talking to my partner about this earlier, about the cost per production. So in terms of, say, China, the value per pound of what you can make. I mean, over here, can you make ordnance? Can you buy steel? Can you then equip the steel? Can you then build a ship out of it, for instance? The cost value proposition against what, say, China or Russia can do with the value of a pound is far different from what we can build and make out of that munitions wise. I mean, so the value, if you're making $75 billion in order to do this, what can we still make out of that money? And is it still worth its value compared to what they can produce?
Yeah, you know, it's an odd one. And there's an awful lot more to do with this economics that we could drill into, but we just don't have the time to do it right now. Maybe we can pick up on something like that the next time we talk, Christian. But in the meantime, big thanks to you, of course, for taking time out of your morning to talk to us. If you use the Extra Twitter platform, give him a follow at 21 Christian James. He's a researcher and a journalist, along with the wonderful Patrick Henningsen and, of course, Basil Ballantyne, who is coming up next, actually talk about continuity. We've got it all here on TNT. So big thanks to you, Christian, and let's hopefully we can talk sooner rather than later. So have a good day, and you lovely listeners out there, brace yourselves. Basil Ballantyne is incoming here, and he'll be arriving any second now. So we'll be right back after this break.
Right now, the forgotten poor are waiting for healing and care, for life-saving medical care, for a chance to live with dignity and hope. They are waiting for Mercy Ships and you. Mercy Ships is the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. And now, as our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship sets sail, Mercy Ships will double our ability to reach children and adults who need us now.
Without the work of Mercy Ships, these patients don't have another option.
Mercy Ships is answering the call to serve suffering people who have nowhere else to turn. Together, we are going to some of the world's most desperate places and bringing a wave of hope and healing to those who need it most. To learn more about this wave of hope, go to mercyships.org today.
Need a ride?
Yeah!
Driving with kids is a big responsibility.
Hop in and buckle up!
So don't sweat the small stuff.
You got paint all over our paper!
Get the big stuff right instead.
What does that mean?
Like making sure your kids are in the correct car seat and buckled up for safer travel.
That deserves a wiggly wiggly wig.
To make sure your child is in the right seat for their age and size, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
In a secret lab, somewhere in the Western Hemisphere, the perfect human specimen has been born. He has the strength of 10 men and the wisdom of 20.
Rick Munn.
Now you listen here. He's a very naughty boy.
TNT Radio.
Now go away.
Oh, what a way to start the morning, eh? If you've just tuned in on Locked and Loaded, you're very, very welcome, whoever you are, whatever you are, whatever you're doing, whatever you're doing. We hope it's nice, legal, and edifying. It's been a great show so far with Gemma and the wonderful Christian James. And now the dessert, the tiramisu, if you like, in the first hour, none other than our very own political editor, Basil Ballantyne. Basil, how are you doing this Thursday, the 25th of April, 2024 morning?
Well, thank you, Rick. Great to be with you. And hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world.
Mm. Scotland, let's get straight down to bones here. We talked about this briefly with Gemma. Breaking news, the SNP, Scottish National Party, is set to break off the Bute House Agreement, ending the power-sharing agreement with the Scottish Greens. This is a report I saw this morning from STV News up in Scotland. What do you make of all this?
It's not quite as dramatic as it first appears, in as much as Hamza Yousaf, the First Minister, is going to continue in office, and says the Scots Nats and the Green Party will continue to cooperate, but less formally. He's been holding a press conference just this morning. The balance has shifted, he said. The Bute House Agreement was intended to provide stability to the Scottish Government, and it's made possible a number of achievements, but it has served its purpose. He says the deal is no longer providing stability in Parliament, and he's told the Scottish Greens he's terminating it with immediate effect. I think they were going to pull out anyway. The nub of the row is over climate change goals and Yousaf's climbing down from some really stringent net zero targets, to which, of course, the Greens have been wedded. Various other policy issues as well, over council tax, road building and the like. So no immediate prospect of elections for the Edinburgh Parliament. Worth noting, of course, that going into coalition with the SNP meant that the Green Party, or a Green Party, was in power in Britain in a national government for the first time in history. That's now over.
Yeah. Yeah, the Greens were there. Do you know what this reminds me of, Basil? This reminds me of a messy divorce where the husband and wife really hate each other, but they say, we're going to stay friends because of the kids, because of the kids. So there's obviously, they still need each other, in inverted commas here. They're still staying, you know, civil towards each other, but let's be under no illusion about this. There's no love lost here, I don't believe, between the SNPs and the Greens. And when you say that they're wedded to their green policies, I think a more appropriate word is welded. They're welded to the green policies, because there's absolutely no separating these greenies from their net zero fantasy targets. And yeah, that was part of the souring of the relationship, I believe, up there in Bute House.
Yes, absolutely. I would modify your metaphor slightly, Rick, to say that they're a couple who are now sleeping in separate bedrooms. The marital bed has been abandoned. And they're now sleeping in separate bedrooms. But seriously, you know, it remains to be seen whether a minority Yousaf, Hamza Yousaf SNP government can continue in power for very long. Detecting weakness and the fact that the SNP are way down in the polls, partly perhaps due to the corruption charges swirling around former First Minister Nicola Sturgeon's husband, doubtless the Conservatives and Labour will be smelling blood and looking to inflict a series of defeats in the Scottish Parliament on Yousaf's now minority government in a bid to force an election, and with the SNP unpopular. Perhaps we'll finally see a resurgence of the Labour Party that dominated Scottish politics for so long. Not that that's necessarily a good idea at all, certainly not the Starmeroid Labour Party, Rick.
I was going to actually ask you, Basil, because we speculate a lot on what might happen at the next, you know, general election in the UK. You know, by the end of January next year, it has to happen. Pretty much the writing could well be on the wall for Sunak. Labour should be the shoe-in. Scotland, I was going to ask you what your thoughts on that one, where you've almost preempted that question and said, well, we could see a resurgence of the Labour Party in Scotland again. Realistically, how much longer can the SNP hang on for? Because they're in tatters. They're in tatters at the minute. Everything does seem to be going to pieces for them.
Well, you know, I'm a betting man, but that isn't something I'd like to bet on, to be honest. We're in completely uncharted territory, and it may be that the separate rooms arrangements for the SNP and the Greens means that they can win enough important votes in the Scottish Parliament to keep going. until the next scheduled elections. So I wouldn't bet, I wouldn't bet on the imminent collapse of Yusuf's government just yet.
Speaking of Scotland, we'll just keep it with Scotland just for a little bit longer here. There's another story that was published yesterday. Again, you know, sensationalist headlines here coming from the Beeb. Scotland in dangerous moment for climate goals. So this has obviously precipitated this first story that we're talking about here. Chris Stark of the Climate Change Committee, or the CCC, as they're known, was giving a speech at Holyrood days after the Scottish government ditched its emissions target. So they're talking about reducing greenhouse gases by 75% by 2030. There's that 2030 target coming up again. That's the defence upping of the spending by 2030. They insist the long-term target to reach net zero by 2045 remains. But when they started crunching the numbers in this one, Basil, they were basically saying it's completely unachievable. Reaching net zero means no longer adding to the total amount of greenhouse gases in 2022. Scotland was warned that it lost its lead over the rest of the UK in tackling the issue. Here's a question for you. They can't manage their own parties. They can't manage their own party finances. They can't manage their own party members not managing to dig themselves into scandalous situations. They can't manage NHS waiting lists. They can't provide for the people of Scotland, England, Wales, Northern Ireland and Ireland what they need to simply keep a roof over their heads in many cases. What makes them think that they can control the weather or they can control the climate when they can't even keep their own houses in order?
Find the whole thing, frankly, a sort of surrealist pantomime, Rick. Ministers had been committed to reducing greenhouse gases by 75% by 2030, with a long-term target to reach net zero by 2045 still in place. I mean, if you look at a globe, Scotland's the size of a postage stamp. And do they really think that they're going to alter the Scottish weather by fiddling about with the tiny amounts of carbon dioxide, which may or may not affect climate? The fact that so much energy resources and all the rest of it are devoted into, as I say, to, you know, to me, a total irrelevance, frankly, particularly when there are so many real world imminent problems facing, you know, families, individuals up and down the country. This sort of completely intangible, ultimately non-specific, because, you know, I'm afraid to say that what Scotland does in terms of reaching its, to put it bluntly, what Scotland does in terms of reaching its interim greenhouse gas targets by 2030 isn't going to make any difference whatsoever to the weather in Scotland, period. Correct. There, I've said it.
Correct. And reducing plastic in biscuit packets, for example, you know, reducing the plastic by 20% while the rest of the produce remains plastic, or giving us little cardboard straws if we should happen to be crossing the threshold of a McDonald's whilst the lids are still plastic and the cups are still plastic and all this nonsense. You know, people are actually buying into this, that it's somehow controlling the climate in which we live and staving off either a heat wave or another ice age coming in, depending on whether or not you have a cardboard straw or not in your local McDonald's or fast food outlet.
I don't want to sound like some sort of, you know, environmental dinosaur. Far from it. The important issues around pollution, plastic in landfill, very important issues, clean rivers, clean air. Mm-hmm. These things are all extremely important. Land use as well, not building over the green belt. But this sort of fiddling about with microscopic changes in the percentage of carbon dioxide in the air, as if a country the size of Scotland could do anything about it anyway. I mean, that's the absurdity of it. It's a tiny little place.
All right, look at these schemes as well, Basil, these so-called ULEZ schemes, ultra-low emission zone schemes in London. We had a lady on this week from used to live in Bristol. They have a CAS scheme, a clean air zone. Glasgow did the same thing. So there's little pockets of the UK have these schemes in place where they claim that they want to increase longevity of their residents in the case of London, or cut back on emissions going into the air in the case of Bath or Bristol. Northern Ireland We have absolutely nothing. Wales, I don't know if they have any clean air zones or ULE zones. Not every town and city in Britain has them, and those that do, they don't have any uniformity with them at all. So again, the schemes that are in place at the minute, whilst on paper they may sound good and virtuous, they don't translate into any real world benefit or influence whatsoever.
Well, and of course, the suspicion is that they are largely revenue-raising exercises, Rick, with the apparent goal of clean air being secondary. I mean, let's face it, air in the UK is much, much cleaner than it was 50, 70, 100 years ago as a result of reduced emissions from vehicles through improvements in technology. And with more electric cars coming on the road, that's set to be the case anyway. So all sorts of issues to do with congestion. I mean, originally it was the congestion charge when it was brought into a very small area in central London, just around the West End and Soho. And I'm all for getting people out of cars in cities if there is public transport to take its place, but not measures that are simply designed to penalise motorists for the sake of raising revenue. Now, I want to do a quick pivot now to another story this morning. David Cameron, Lord Cameron, says he can be fully accountable without facing scrutiny in the House of Commons chamber, saying he spends more time before peers than former ministers Lord Mandelson and Baroness Morgan ever did. He's defended the government's rejection of calls for him to appear at the bar of the House by saying there was no precedent for it. Critics from across the political divide have said that elected politicians should be able to question Lord Cameron, holder of one of the four great offices of state in the lower chamber. Now, the Commons bar, I don't think they mean where you get your subsidised pint or whiskey.
That's what I was thinking.
This is the part of the antiquated Houses of Parliament where peers and members of the Commons can interact directly. It's a boundary beyond which non-MPs cannot pass. An arcane procedure which has been used more than once, including in 1814 for the Duke of Wellington, who defeated Napoleon at the Battle of Waterloo and was asked to address Parliament about the wars. So he stood at the bar. But Cameron has rejected the idea, saying, I'm afraid I'm not responsible for anything of that magnitude. So there isn't a precedent, and I think the government has made the right decision. Well, I disagree. I think particularly in a time of international crisis, as we're in now, MPs should be able to question the Foreign Secretary directly.
Yeah, they should be able to, but whether or not they can or not is another thing too. And I was laughing whenever you mentioned the bar, appearing at the bar. I thought, well, he would have no problem probably appearing at the bar if it was for a subsidized pint at the taxpayer's expense. But of course, that's not the bar in question. Just one last story before we wrap this one up here on a little tangent here. TikTok CEO expects to defeat the US ban. We aren't going anywhere, he said. Such a hullabaloo over a little social media app these days, Basil. It's got to be more to it than meets the eye here.
And this is the sort of thin end of the censorship web in the United States, and directly related to the campus protests across American university, where thousands of students are objecting to the genocide. Now, TikTok is largely used by young people, where they post short format videos, largely filmed themselves, and also share perspectives and opinions. And what the US government don't like is that it has become, let's say, a hotbed of content which is favorable towards the Palestinian cause. So as a result, AIPAC, the Israel lobbying group in the United States, has lent on its bought and paid for politicians to try and get the thing banned, even though it's used by 170 million Americans. America's supposed to have the First Amendment, freedom of speech. The claim, of course, is that because it's Chinese owned, Byte Dance is the company, that somehow it represents the Chinese Communist Party infiltrating the minds of young Americans and subverting them one way or another. But as you said at the top, rest assured, we aren't going anywhere, said Xu Zichu in a video posted. Now, they're talking about selling at least a large stake in the company, so it's no longer Chinese owned. Supposedly, the White House spokeswoman, Karine Jean-Pierre, says that we don't want to see a ban. This is about PRC ownership, she added, referring to the People's Republic of China. Well, no doubt AIPAC would like to see it owned by interests more favorable to Israel, shall we say, Rick?
Yeah, well, we'll see what the future of TikTok holds. I can remember vaguely, I think Trump tried to ban it when he was the president at the time because he said it was basically just a Chinese surveillance tool and no American should have it on their phones. But of course, this is coming from the mouth of the godfather of the warp speed himself, Mr. Donald J. Trump. So take what he says with a pinch of salt. We're out of time now, Basil. It's been an absolute blast talking to you again this morning. Thank you so much for all your input as always, and all being well, we shall reconvene for the final time this week tomorrow morning here on Locked and Loaded. I'll be back on the other side of the news with more guests, more shenanigans and skullduggery here live, uncensored, unscripted.